Hello and welcome to Creating, Living, and Making Projects, the podcast for the confident clamper. I'm Grant Alexander, and joining me as always is Morley Kurt. Unfortunately, Adam is unavailable this week, so instead we've invited a fool to take his place. Some say he was once a doorman at a bar and that he used to work in IT. All we know is that he's called the Steve. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, guys. Yeah, thanks for that. That's a brilliant introduction, I think.
Yeah. So could for anyone who doesn't know who you are, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you do and
cool
and all that fun stuff.
My name is Steve, obviously. I'm on Instagram as Moonshine Metalworks, and have the I'm one of the hosts of the Fools for Tools podcast. As already mentioned, I used to work in IT. I left IT about 3-4 years ago to go full time working for another blacksmith. I've been kind of working in, or I've been doing making things since I was a very young kid. I grew up on a farm, and there was always something that needed replacing or fixing or whatever. So I've always kind of been involved in like the practical aspect of things. And I think that was a big part of why I left IT. I was IT for, I think it was 14 years that I spent in IT. Wow.
You were a doorman when you were like two?
I spent a long time with doing two or three jobs at the same time. Oh, okay. I started out running pubs. Like after I turned 18, I worked in bars and then started running bars. Then realized that if you ran a bar for someone else, you'd basically do 100 plus hours a week and get paid for about 30 of them. So I ended up leaving that, going into IT, but also working in the evenings as a cocktail barman. Then realized that I actually got paid more if I was a doorman. So I ended up working on the door and did that alongside IT for, I think I was a doorman for about 12 years. But I also had a separate business aside from that, where I was doing bars for like weddings and events and things like that, where you'd go and set up in a field or anything.
Wow.
Yeah, it was good fun doing that. Then went on to IT, realized that I desperately missed being creative. Did a blacksmithing kind of course one evening a week for 6 weeks. And weirdly enough, I was actually looking at leaving IT altogether and emigrating to Canada. And it was all set to do that. I knew I was going to be made redundant from my job in the coming months. So I was kind of relying on the redundancy package from that to help fund it. But whilst I was waiting for my redundancy to come through, I ended up working or finding a local blacksmith, working with him, and kind of went, well, I really enjoy doing this. I might as well stay and do this. Started doing that. Started as a teaching assistant, which was I think teaching is the best way to learn anything. Because it forces you to truly understand the things that you're trying to put across to people, because there's that whole thing of, you know, if you can't explain it to a 5-year-old, then you don't really understand it. Like teaching really helped me get much better at blacksmithing much quicker. Worked for Alex for the last 6 years. And then last week, I think I can talk about it here now because our episode came out today where I announced it. But yeah, I handed my notice in for Alex this week. And I think I've got until the end of August working here. And then I'm off to kind of figure things out on my own.
Not in Canada?
Maybe. I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to be doing yet. That's still very much up for debate. But it was time for me to move on from where I was. So I decided that now seemed like a good time because there's a few things happening at the workshop. So I had my notice in. And now I'm just kind of trying to figure out where I go from here. I'm hoping to do a little bit more with the social media stuff as well, because I've I've just not posted on, I've not used Instagram or YouTube for, well, I've not used Instagram for over a year, other than I think like 3 or 4 posts. And YouTube I haven't posted to for about 4 years. So yeah, I kind of want to get back into doing stuff like that because I really enjoyed doing it. And I'm not sure if it's going to be a case of doing it to make money, but just doing it kind of for the enjoyment of doing it and seeing where that takes me.
Nice. Well, we wanted to talk to you about quitting, and because you've got a lot of experience in it. But also, it just seemed like a good idea because you were one of the few people I know that quit their office job to work for someone. Mm. Almost every maker I know quit their office job to work for themselves.
Yeah.
And then sometimes ended up back at an office job because they couldn't make it or whatever, or they didn't actually end up enjoying it. But I thought it would be a really good to have you on to talk about some of the pros and cons about working for someone else versus trying to go at it on your own, which is what Morley did. He quit his office job to go at it on his own, and or just staying in your office job and not sleeping. And
that's I think that's kind of that is one of the big issues with if you try and go on your own, you've got to ramp it up, and you've got to have that big safety net whilst you have that transition and that crossover, and your choice is basically the you don't sleep, or you've got a really, really big safety net of a big chunk of cash that's going to keep you going for however long it takes, and just take the plunge. And I think for me, especially because I was only just starting out in the craft, I knew that if I was to do it as a hobby and then try and go into it professionally on my own, it was just going to take me years and years and years. And to be quite blunt, I didn't have it in me to stay in the office job that much longer. So when the opportunity came up to go and working for Alex as a teaching assistant, I took that, and that was part time. So I was doing the IT and that at the same time. And then ended up working a job where I was doing 4 days on, 4 days off. So my 4 days off, I was working for Alex. And eventually it just got to the point where, because that allowed me to get loads of practice doing the essentials and the basics of blacksmithing, and also being taught at the same time. And because that was a big thing for me, is it's kind of a free lesson and even getting paid to learn. Hmm. And then it got to the point where I added enough value to the business that he was able to say, right, okay, I can pay you a decent wage. And I want you to come on full time, which meant that I was able to go, yeah, okay, brilliant, and turn around to my IT guy and said, all right, sorry, but I'm going to go off and be happy instead.
So. Yeah, that what you mentioned earlier, the safety net, I think is a huge part of it. And that was, for me, a big mental thing that I could lean on. So when I left my engineering job, I had the good fortune of having a safety net. I just worked a very lucrative summer job at an off-grid lodge. So I'd made a lot of money and spent almost none of it. And then on top of that, I had a bunch of savings. So the mental knowledge, like the knowledge that if I didn't work for a while, I would still be okay, was huge for me. And I actually did not dip into it very much. Every couple months or so, you know, I'd be looking at my bank account and say, you know, rent's going to be tricky this month. So, you know, I withdraw a bit of money. And I knew that was kind of what I was going to do going in. And so I had no qualms about it. But more so, it was like, I figured out ways of making money and would try to be pretty non-discriminatory when it came to how to make money. And I know that sounds really bad the way I say it, but what I more mean is like, you know, for a while I was just doing Uber Eats bike delivery and definitely had to like take a big slice of humble pie to do that because, you know, it's not the most glamorous job. A lot of times I was delivering to very wealthy people and, you know, there's some envy there and there's some like, oh, you know, I wish I was at a different place in my life, but it was a really nice juxtaposition to sitting inside and working on my business all day. And then I'd be able to bike around the city, listen to music, explore a little bit, be a little social. And then eventually it just got to the point where I was naturally ready to move on to the next thing. And I couldn't justify that time anymore.
Yeah. I think like that's such a good way of putting it. Like that, and yes, there is that kind of envy when you're in that position where it's like, oh, I wish I had that bike or that car or that whatever. But I think because you know what you're working towards, it makes it a lot easier. And whilst, yeah, having that safety net is a huge thing. A friend of mine is in a position where he's in a job that he doesn't particularly enjoy. And his worry is like, well, what do I do if I leave? And it was it's quite easy to kind of say, oh, well, yeah, just you'll figure it out. But the thing that I kind of said to him is like, well, yeah, but what would you do if your boss turned around and fired you tomorrow? Like, you would find a way, you would figure it out. And I, as much as I think like, if you can have a safety net, then do it. Like this time round where I quit, I don't have a safety net. Like I have nothing in terms of savings or money in the bank. I'm going to need to make money from the day after I leave the workshop. I need to start working. And it like I say, it might be a case of doing a job that's not particularly glamorous, but I think especially with the maker mentality, most people, they can kind of turn their hand to most things. They can find a way of adding value to any situation that they're in. And you know, people will pay for that. And I think as long as you show kind of the willingness to work, like there's always jobs out there, even if it is a case of, even if it's going on and just laboring for someone else for a week, like moving bags of dirt around or whatever, like there's always something you can be doing as long as you don't mind it not being particularly glamorous. And generally those jobs, like those kind of shorter term jobs, those unstable ones, they tend to pay better because, you know, it's that thing of, well, they need someone like right there and then. And it's kind of like, well, actually, yeah, okay, I'll give you a little bit extra because you're available, sort of thing. And yeah, doing this time around, it's, I think because there is that big fear of like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? Like, what if it all goes wrong? It's like, and it's easy to say, well, you know, what if it all goes right, which is something that gets said a lot, but if it all does go wrong, like you will figure it out. Like absolute worst case, you go, okay, this isn't working out. I've got to go get a job at the supermarket and stack shelves for 6 months whilst I recover and figure other things out. But the beauty of working a job like that is you end up not having to put all your mental energy into that job. So you can still do other things at the same time.
I'm most afraid, like I'll do whatever. I'll work at McDonald's. I don't care.
Yeah.
But I know that if I worked at McDonald's for the pay that they're doing, I wouldn't be able to afford the things that I have.
Yeah.
And I have zero debt other than my house. I still know I wouldn't be able to live the life I live. There's only so much I can cut, you know, other than beer. There's only so much I can cut. So I, like, my biggest worry is that I would get into a situation where I am working so much to get by that I wouldn't have the mental ability to find another job. Like, I know so many people that work so hard to keep themselves afloat that they couldn't even think about looking for a new job. And I'm like, if you just look for a new job, you wouldn't have to work so hard. But they're just like, I just don't have it in me. And that's my fear.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a super valid fear. And it's something that I am very concerned about. But weirdly enough, about 2 weeks before I handed my notice in, I was talking to a friend, Camille, who I haven't seen in a few years. And he spent the last couple of years, or sorry, the last 6 months or so, doing aid deliveries to Ukraine, because he lives in Poland, and he was just driving down to Kiev in his van with supplies. And he was able to do that because of his job. He works as a tour manager. So he drives bands around on tour. And it was great because I was chatting to him and I said to him about the situation and we were talking about it. And I kind of said, like, I used to do a little bit of tour driving years and years ago, and said, actually, I really miss it. I'd really like to do something like that again. It'd be quite nice to just get back into that. And, the next day he sent me a message being like, just so you know, there's like this gig available and this gig available. Like, we need drivers for 3 weeks here or a month there or whatever it was. And the kind of conversation went on from there of the fact that once you're in that situation, you're in that world and you've got that freedom to say, actually, you know, if that opportunity comes up, you can quit your job at McDonald's on the spot. It doesn't matter. Whereas if you're working a job where you kind of, you're half happy and you're comfortable, it's a lot harder to go, yeah, you know, yeah. What? I'm going to sack it off for a month's adventure sort of thing. So I think being out there and being able to put yourself in that position of kind of meeting more people and having those opportunities, it's not even about searching for those opportunities. It's putting yourself in a position.
Being open.
Yeah. Being in a position where you're able to receive those opportunities. I think that's a huge step forwards. And that could be as simple as going to a maker event and talking to a company and talk about a video that you want to do and them going, oh, well, actually we might be interested in that and kind of building on it from there. Like it doesn't have to be a huge thing where you quit your job and go off for 6 months. It could be something as simple as, you know, getting paid for your first video or whatever. I think it's easy for someone in, let's say, a position like mine to say, oh yeah, just quit it and run. But there are a load of fears and things, and they're all valid. And it very much depends on the individual person's kind of situation.
Right. Like you don't have any kids.
No.
I don't think you have a wife.
Nope.
Or a spouse. So you don't have dependents.
Yeah.
And that changes things so massively. Much.
Yeah.
Like in the, like, same with Morley. You don't have any kids, Morley. I know you're engaged now, but not having anything tying you to a specific place,
yeah,
makes it. I remember in my 20s just being so much more free,
yeah,
and not worried about anything. And now that the math has changed,
yeah, I think like for me, my only dependent really is Murph, like my dog. Mm-hmm. And you know, he can go and live with my parents. That's not a huge deal. I've got to make the mortgage payments, like that's it. That's my only concern. And you know, like I said, there are ways and means of doing that, and I am in a very privileged position for that. You know, 2 years ago when I was in a long-term relationship, I probably wouldn't have done this. I probably would have found a safety net of some description before handing my notice in. But yeah, I think that probably played a big part in me going, actually, you know what? I am free. I don't want to get stuck in a position where I have dependence without being kind of happy and doing the things that I want to do. So yeah, it's a very situational thing, I think.
Yeah, it's funny, like I left that engineering job in relative terms for me, like kind of a long time ago at this point. It's hard to think back at it and like put myself in the moment because so much has changed since then. But I just remember feeling so in the wrong place, and more so than being like, I'm going to go start my business and be a full-time maker. It was more a feeling of like, this is not right. I need to get out of here because I'm looking at my boss's job. I don't want their job. I don't want this life of like being in a cubicle or even like working elsewhere in the company where I'm not in a cubicle because I don't care about this work. Like this is not the place for me. And it's something actually Eden and I have talked about a lot. Like we both value in work, like being able to just like be in a bunch of different places throughout the day. Like one of the things I really like about what I'm doing right now is I can like go and work in the garage. I can go on a trip to Home Depot. I can go skateboarding in the middle of the day. You know, go meet with a friend across the city. And like all of those can be like work things for me in some way, even skateboarding, because it helps with my productivity. But just being, feeling like I'm stuck somewhere, like does not do well for my mental health. And a lot of those, the last 3 years has just been like figuring out like what I want and kind of stumbling my way through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a super, super important thing. And that's the thing, is that there are a lot of people that I've, especially because everyone knows that, you know, I cut IT and I went blacksmithing. There are a lot of people that kind of ask, like, oh, how did you do it? How can I do it? And all this. And it's, I think that's important. It's figuring out why you want to leave, because it might not be a case if you want to leave and become a maker. It's just the fact that, you know, that's what you've seen other people doing, and that's what you kind of feel like that's what you should be doing. Whereas actually, you know, you might actually be much better suited working for someone else in a normal 9-to-5 job, but just in a different 9-to-5 job to the one you're doing. I think like figuring out that kind of that why you want to quit is as important as having a plan for what comes next.
I know that, like, thinking about my last job prior to this one that I'm currently in, I was working in a place that I just absolutely hated. So in my public service career, I've worked about 15 years. In the 1 year I worked there, I took more sick time than I had ever taken. And I just, like, that was like the light when I looked at it, and I went, and the entire office was, everyone's taking sick time. Yeah. If I woke up in the morning and went, I'm like, calling in sick, can't make it in today. Right. Where normally, like, if you love your job, you go in, like, you got to be sick to not go in. Right. Or you just, depending on what kind of, like, if you're puking and stuff, don't go in. But if you're just like, oh, I'm not feeling a little, or I had a couple too many drinks the night before, I usually, if I have a couple too many drinks, force myself to work.
Yeah.
But then I would do, like, I would try and find ways to drink so that I could, so the next day I'd be hungover, so I would call in sick to work. I'm sure that was like my mindset.
Yeah.
Because it happened so often. But that's, you got to look at, are you doing things that make it so that you, like, that are like red flags on your job? And if so, try and find a new one that hopefully doesn't do that.
Yeah. Cause I think like I think I've talked about it on Falls with Tools before, but like the big reason that I left my IT job was because I was off ill for a week. And I don't know what it's like over there, but in the UK you get if you have 5 days off consecutively, you can do that without a doctor's note. For after that, generally you're asked to provide some kind of doctor's note to say that you're actually sick. And I didn't really want to have to go visit the doctor, and I wasn't that ill. I was like, oh, I had been that ill, but I was getting over it. So I went into work and I sat at my desk and I did literally nothing for the entire day. And at the end of the day, my manager came up to me and said, oh, thanks for today, Steve. Really great work. It's really good having you back. And I was like, I didn't do anything. And then basically I spent the entire week not actually doing any work and didn't get brought up on it. Nobody noticed it. Like, my boss, my manager was still going like, oh yeah, cheers, Steve. It's really good. And I was thinking like, oh God, this is like what I do just doesn't matter.
It's office space.
Yeah. 100%. And yeah, that was what kind of like finally gave me the push. It was like, this is just not where I want to be. I don't want to be doing something where I can get away with doing that. Like, I want my work to be actually valued, and to be actually valued, I have to actually do something that people notice.
So I still remember the first job I quit, and I think it was my first job working for someone else aside from my little like neighborhood lawn mowing business.
Yeah.
And I was working at a restaurant in my hometown. I was a busboy. At that point, I was like also a food runner and a barback. Really worked my way up the high school restaurant hierarchy. And it was at a point in high school where like there was just like too many extracurriculars, and I was just feeling a little overwhelmed. And I was like about to go off to university, and I never quit a job before. So I was like trying to like do it the proper way. So I wrote out a 2 weeks notice, resignation, put it in an envelope. And this is in a restaurant. And I have no idea. I waited until the end of my shift. I was so nervous. Like, I think my hands were shaking, my voice was shaking. And I went up to my manager. I was like, hey, like, could I just like talk to you in private for a second? And she was like, sure. And then as we were walking, she's like, oh, are you quitting? I was like, yeah, here's my 2 weeks. She's like, oh, okay, no problem.
Brilliant.
I think, I'm sure the restaurant industry gets a few people quitting all the time. Like, it's not a.
Yeah. I think most people don't even give a 2 weeks notice.
No. Most people just don't turn up for the next shift.
Yeah.
When I left my first IT job, I'd been in the, I'd, I was really lucky with the job that I got. I completely fell into the role. I got promoted up a few times, and the job was with every promotion I was getting way more responsibility and not any more pay. And it got to the point where I was like, I was about 10, 15 grand underpaid for the job that I was doing. So I kind of said like, look, I want to either, I want to discuss this pay rise or go elsewhere. And it went back and forth with being constantly promised, oh yeah, we're going to sort it out. And that lasted for about a year. And I said to my boss, like, look, I'm going to start looking for another job because this just isn't getting sorted out. And he was like, oh no, we're sorted out. Don't worry. We're sorted out. And I had a lot of issues with this manager anyway. Because just, it wasn't happening. So I started applying for other jobs. Within about 3 days, I had an interview for another job, went down, had this interview, got offered it pretty much on the spot. And they basically said, like, as soon as you can start, we'll have you. I was like, great, okay. Went home that night, wrote out my resignation letter, knowing that, you know, I was going to send it because it was just an email. So I'm going to send it as soon as I get into the office the next day. And my partner at the time was really into baking. So she also made a cake that just said, I quit on it. And it was great because nice. I took that in a box. I kind of went up to my desk with this cake box. And everyone was like, Steve's brought cake in. Is it his birthday? What's going on? And I went to my desk, logged in, sent the email, and then just went and took the cake and put it on like the, we had like a cake table where everyone puts the cakes that they bring in, and put that on there and just opened it up and just went back to my desk and sat down. And it was great because everyone just goes over like all excited for cake, looked and just went, wait, what? What's happening?
Can I hear more about cake tables? What, is this a normal UK thing that like there's a table set up just for cakes?
I mean, it was in this office because we basically like in the UK, like if it's your birthday and you work in an office, then you take cakes in for everyone. So if you're in a big office, then there's cakes there all the time. Or if someone goes away on holiday and they come back and they'll bring like sweets or treats from that region, wherever they were. Like I worked in a company that had another office in Johannesburg. So we'd have people flying to South Africa all the time. And every time that they came back, they'd bring like at least a kilo of biltong that would just get dumped onto that table and be gone within minutes. And yeah, it's just kind of like where all the treats and snacks goes.
Yeah, we had a filing cabinet that at the top said this snack spot.
Nice.
But yeah. it wasn't like a cake table. Nobody brought in cake.
You were missing out, see?
No, we got Timbits.
I think it's very natural if you're about to make any big change to like jump to the worst that could happen.
Yeah.
But I think it's also interesting to note, like right now, this moment in time is like a time when workers are super in demand in general.
Yeah.
And it's probably like one of the best times to quit your job, to be honest. Yeah. And it like with just one example is the fact like Eden recently graduated her social work program, and she had two part-time jobs, one of the, which she kind of already had while she was doing her school, and another one, which was a cool opportunity that like might've had some opportunities for advancement. And that one was like really good, but it was probably, she probably wasn't going to be like bumped up to a case manager, which is what she wanted to do. So she was kind of like actively looking for a more long-term full-time thing. And through a great serendipitous series of events, she eventually got this awesome job. And not only did she get it, but when she accepted it, they're like, great. And we're also going to pay you 15% more, like without her even asking.
That's awesome.
So just the fact, like some in certain positions, people are like so in demand that you won't even know going into it, like the amazing opportunities that could present themselves to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like that's a really good point because there is that thing. And I think that kind of ties in with what I was saying earlier on about like the fact that especially maker people, they tend to be quite good at making themselves invaluable. I mean, Brett that I do the podcast with, like he often tells a story about when he was working at the print shop, like he was just the guy that everyone went to and I've done it before in offices where I was just the one that people went to for fixing problems. And even if it wasn't directly related to your job, it just became that guy. And I think if you can make a name for yourself within either within an industry or within a local area or whatever, as being like that kind of go-to person, then yeah, finding work, even if it's not a full-time office or a full-time gig, like even if it's just like temporary things, like if you can be known for being able to fix things and do things and resolve problems, like that's a really, really good position to be in. And I think that ties in better with kind of the maker mentality as well. I was listening to the Making It podcast earlier on, and they were talking about fatigue. And Bob made a comment about the fact that like within any kind of job, like you can get fatigue from just doing the same thing, like day in, day out. And if you're not stimulated in any way, you can become fatigued just by that. And it doesn't have to be taxing work, but it can just be mentally and physically draining, just trying to keep yourself on track. So those, that kind of like making yourself invaluable by being a problem solver, I think is a really good thing. But then again, if you can find a job that is massively in demand, like if you've got a skill that's overvalued, but that makes it sound negative, but like that's in demand, then yeah, that's great. You should definitely kind of capitalize on that.
Yeah, on the front page of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation or CBC news today was, now's the time to ask for a raise.
Yeah.
Right? So like, this is the time. So workers, I think if you're out there and you like your job and you don't want to quit, but you just want more money, which I can understand,
yeah,
then now's the time to ask, because you have the ability to really quit and find a new job unless you work somewhere like as a farrier. Then yeah, maybe there's not a lot of farrier jobs out there.
Yeah. I mean, because we've got a big thing in the UK at the moment of the fact that we've got a bunch of rail strikes going on. And it's quite funny because the media is talking about it, and they're a lot of the media are quite surprised at the fact that actually most common people kind of support the guys that are on strike, because you know they're not asking for anything ridiculous. They're just like, we just want to make sure that our jobs are safe and that we get paid a fair wage. And especially, and I don't want to start going into politics, but like the situation over here at the moment is that so many of the big companies are making massive, massive profits.
Yeah.
But the cost of living is going up, and nobody's being compensated in terms of their wages. Like the wages in the UK at the moment have, like, we haven't had as a general average, the wages haven't gone up to match inflation for several years, yet all the companies are making huge amounts of profit. And it's like, well, hang on, something's not right here. Like, where is this disparity going on? So yeah, like you say, demand your raise or go somewhere else.
Yeah. That's, I mean, being able to sort of demand the money that you are worth is, in my opinion, one of the great things about working for yourself if you can make it work. So like, for example, like I'm building this Torah lectern that's been in the works for a while. And, you know, we had agreed on a price a couple years ago, or maybe a year and a half ago. And so when I was kind of looking back over that, I'm like, wait a second, there's been about 10% inflation in the last year. I am 100% adjusting this quote for inflation. So it wasn't even a question. I was like, yep, you know, this was the previous price, just adjusted for inflation. This is the new price. Send over the money when at your earliest convenience. I'm just like, yeah, that's the price. And no one can tell me otherwise because I'm doing the work.
Right. And the cost of wood has gone up way more than 10%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in this particular example, yeah, I wasn't paying the wood. They kind of bought all the materials and then I'm just building it. Oh my God. I still don't understand how this wood costs so much for this, because they sent me the quote from the lumber supplier, or like, it was really the builder who kind of bought it, the contractor who was just getting everything. And they sent me the invoice. I was like, is there any way we can get a more detailed breakdown, because this is incredibly expensive. Yeah. Like, I'm not paying for it, but just so you know, this is really expensive. And they were basically like, yep, that's the price. I was like, okay, as long as you're okay paying that price, go for it.
Wow. It sounds like it was a builder who doubled, who took they like, bought and doubled it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was some politicking going on that I did not need to be involved in. I was like, as long as I just need to raise this to be ethically like in the clear, yep. But go ahead and pay it if you would like. All those quantities are correct.
So to kind of get a little bit back on topic a little, I wanted to talk about the kind of pros about working for someone and the cons about working for someone, because I think that's your unique situation, Steve, of leaving and working for another person. You talked a lot about how you kind of got learning on the job, but what were some of the cons about working for someone else?
So the big kind of obvious con is I don't get to choose what I make. I don't get to choose what I do. So part of the reason that I'm moving on is because I got stuck. I got really good at doing this one thing. And then I was the guy that was doing the one thing. And it meant I just had no variety in my work. And I think that's a big problem. Like, and you don't get to kind of, you don't get to dip your fingers into everything, and you don't always get in on the fun, exciting projects. Sometimes you're just there kind of plodding along doing the kind of almost like production work, where it's almost like a factory worker sort of thing. As opposed to being able to go out and go, oh, I want to go to a cafe in town and repair things for people, or I want to go and do this, or I want to go and do that. Like you don't get that choice. So for me, I think that's kind of the big thing is the lack of, like autonomy, personal autonomy. But again, it depends entirely on who and what you're doing. Like when I first started working for Alex, there was a lot less of that because the business has changed massively in the last few years. And the kind of work was a lot more varied and we were doing a lot more different things. But also there's the fact that it as well as not getting to choose what you do, you also don't always get to choose where you go with things. So, you know, I've been asked to go to a few events, doing demonstrations or running classes or even just giving talks, at these events. But because it would have been during business hours as such, that would have to go through Alex. So it's down to him whether or not I go to it, or whether we go to it. And then that means that it's not necessarily me going, it's him going, or it's all of us going. And if it's all of us going, then that induces more cost, which means actually we can't do it. And so on and so forth. So it's not always sunshines and rainbows, but I do think it was hugely beneficial, for me. And I think it's, if you find the right person, it can be great. I just think it's probably better to see it as a transitional phase rather than, like, if that's what you want to do, if you want to be going off and doing your own thing and being more creative, unless you're working with someone, in more of a partnership sort of way. I think maybe it is a better transition rather than be all and end all.
Yeah. 100% agree on the, personal autonomy of working for yourself. Like, that's one of the major things I love about it. And if you can make it work, it's awesome. It's one interesting thing I'm finding now, though, is as I'm starting to gain a little more success, is I'm starting to have more people trying to like get a piece of the pie. And like, you know, some of them are opportunities, which is great. And like, you know, collaboration requests and like sponsorship opportunities, like that's all awesome. I'm not complaining about it. But I'm trying to be very careful now about what I take on, because I can see these scenarios play out and I'm like, this is going to be a lot of work. And is it like, is it feel genuine? Is it a video I want to make? Is it going to be worth it? And so a lot of just like trying not to commit to things that I don't need to commit to.
Yeah.
And that's one thing you said, Steve, is, you know, you don't get to choose what you do. But if you're scraping by, you don't get to choose what you do either.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm sure a year ago, Morley, any one of these opportunities you're looking at, you would have looked at a lot differently.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, it's like a unique problem to this moment in time.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to put myself in another place.
Like, if Raid Shadow Legends contacted you a year ago and offered the money.
If Raid Shadow offering. Legends contacted me now, I would consider it. Because that's easy, right? Like, it's an ad read. Like, if you want to give me $1,000 to read something, and it's like, you know, no one is. I think when people see that sort of ad, is a whole conversation in itself, but I feel like when people see that ad, they kind of like see what the deal is. They're like, clearly you're just doing an ad read, like what Jimmy DiResta does.
Yeah.
But if it's like, you know, have to make a whole project around a certain product, that's something else entirely.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think, like, again, with that kind of thing is it, you're tied into what opportunities you can take. But also, like, I was very fortunate working for Alex. Like, he wasn't one of those people, because there are a lot of business owners out there that they may be creatives or they may be whatever, but they will see taking on someone like myself or like whoever as an employee, kind of an apprentice sort of thing. They will see that as an opportunity to take advantage of that person. Much the same way that if you are a maker and you're looking at bringing someone else into your workshop to provide an extra hand, like, that other person might be looking at you to take advantage. Like, unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there that are like that. So I think, yeah, you have to, if you are looking at doing something like I did, or if you're looking at taking someone on, you have to be very, I don't want to say wary, because that makes it sound so negative, but you just have to be very sure about the person that you're going in with. Like, but I mean, again, it's one of those, like, I think there is this, this kind of fear around, well, you know, if I'm making the leap, I've got to make the right choice right from the first go. Like, you know, if I'm going to quit my 9 to 5 and go and do this thing, I've got to get it right first time. It's like, well, you don't. There's no law to say that you can't quit multiple times. Like, I know when I was doing it before, like, I had a period between jobs where I was working as a temp worker, but also I did about 3 or 4 different jobs in a year, because I take the job on because I got offered it and was like, okay, yeah, I'll do this. And I do it for a couple of months and go, actually, this really isn't for me, and hammer my notice in and go on to the next one. And I think, much like anything, like, the more you do it, the more you get used to it, and the less intimidating it is. So yeah, if you're worried about quitting your job, just do it and then get another job and then quit that one, and then you won't worry about it so much.
Yeah. It just takes experience.
Yeah.
On the topic of, like, picking the right people and how important of a decision that is. So when I went to do the 3D printed repairs, I wanted a camera person with me, and the original idea was for Eden to do that with me. Mm. But the way her work schedule came out, she was going to be working an overnight shift right before that. Ooh. And it was going to mean basically that she wasn't going to be there for, like, the first half of the day. And I had certain, like, I really wanted the beginning, middle, and end. So I was like, okay, like, I need someone there to film me. And I was thinking about just putting out a call in, like, a Toronto makers group and just, like, seeing if I could hire someone for a few hours just to be my filmographer. But I really didn't want to do that, because I would have to, number one, like, this person, like, I wanted someone with experience, but, you know, that person might not have good just, like, camera work skills. But Eden has spent so much time with me and done enough camera work for me that, like, she really knows what I want, and we can communicate really well. So to get a new person to come in just for a few hours to do that, I was like, oh, this is going to be so such a headache and might not work out. Luckily, in the end, she was able to be there for the full day. She did only get 1 hour of sleep the night before, because she did end up working an overnight shift. So shout out to her for doing that. But yeah, it was, like, so great to have her. And, you know, maybe one day she can be my, like, full-time employee.
Yeah.
Well, I think that wraps up this conversation really well. And I think we should talk, because we just didn't want to screw up a segue, the Fools with Tools way. So instead, instead of doing what we were going to do, we just went with the segue. And so we're going to talk now with the Clamp Challenge. So for those who don't know, the Clamp Challenge was, because by the time this comes out, it's going to be over. You won't be able to put your entry in. But it was basically a challenge put on by our podcast to make something out of a clamp or make your own clamp, and make it either fun, functional, or artistic. And we've had a lot of great entries, and we're going to go over a couple. The first one I'm going to go over is 292 by Devin. He made a chair. He made it a while ago, and for some reason it didn't pop up in the hashtags, but it is super cool. It's made out of a bunch of hand screw clamps, and I just think it's awesome.
I literally have just opened that one up on a separate tab because I was going to talk about how cool it looks, although the arms look incredibly uncomfortable because there's going to be a bit of thing right in the way. But
I think if he sawed off the thread in the back flush, it would be okay. And then you could hold on to the handles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's just that back thread that's the problem. But I love the idea of it. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Well, we also had an entry from Keith, former guest from Blackthorn Concepts. He made a clamp bookshelf. Did you guys have a look at that one? Yeah.
I did. It's very nice looking. Full transparency, I was telling these guys in the pre-show, it's been such a crazy week that I really haven't had a chance to look at many of these. But I will – I mean, I'm looking forward to the wrap-up episode in the next one because I'll definitely take the time to look at all of them leading into that.
Yes, definitely. For those who don't know, we're going to be doing our next episode. We're going to be doing the wrap up where we're going to go over every single entry, and we're going to at the end announce the winners of all the fun prizes that we have. But so since Morley hasn't gone over all of them, and since Steve can't see the Google Sheets that we're looking at, I'll just go over all of them. Full Steam Designs, Chris over there, he made an English wheel out of a C-clamp, a giant C-clamp.
That looks so cool. I love that idea.
Yeah, and he's got a cool reel showing it actually working, which is nice.
English wheels, it's a type of technique for bending sheet metal, right? Or forming sheet metal?
Yeah,
for putting curves on it.
I've seen videos of people using that, and I have no idea how that works. I understand you're stressing the metal in certain ways to make it bend, but the videos I've seen of people using those, and maybe it's a different style. I've seen these big kind of motorized ones, or maybe they're hand cranked, but I'm like, it seems very unintuitive. You would just have to get a lot of experience using it.
Yeah. It's quite a technical thing, the way they actually work. It's mostly down to magic. But yeah, I've spent many years wanting to get a bit of experience on an English wheel because, like I say, I think unless you've got that experience with them, it's baffling how they actually work.
Yeah, I don't understand how they work either. But I think it has something to do with squishing the metal and only one side. Like a blacksmith should be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not a very accusatory.
Isn't blacksmithing just magic too?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah. It's just magic and hitting things.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, sorry.
It is really cool. I think he just put out the video today, and I haven't had a chance to watch the actual build video, but I'm going to do that soon. Another one I saw is the same thing, I think it was put out a little bit before this one, but he added the hashtag in there. It's Chelt, Morley, say it. You said it better than me.
Cheltenham, vintage and classic.
Yeah.
Almost sounds like an English village.
It's like Chelt,
somewhere in New England. Oh, okay. I think Steve got it.
Yeah.
Cheltenham. Yeah, so he also,
can you wait, sorry, I was talking over you. Can you say that one more time?
Cheltenham.
Okay.
Cheltenham.
Do that, all the middle letters.
Yeah.
It's like just say it quickly and it's fine.
Worcester.
Yeah, so that's another he calls it a G clamp. I don't like people who call it a G clamp. I don't know why. But I think they look more like a C clamp to me. But I get it. I get there's that little bit.
Yeah, I've always called them E-clamps because it's that bit.
Yeah, but it doesn't go backwards. My name starts with a G. I write G's a lot. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways. We also had Dan Hench made a coat slash hat rack. I guess it's like he's got a hoodie on there and a hat out of one of them hand screw clamps. The hand screw clamp turned out to be the one that people made the most out of, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty cool. It's like an interesting little design there to get the hat off the coat. And then one that came in just before we're recording this. We're recording on Friday at 1:30, which when we started, it's now 2:40. Bob the Woodwork, he's an Ottawa guy. He made a guitar pedal board, and it has little clamps that I think he 3D printed.
Those are super cool.
Yeah, just before we started. So I didn't get a good chance to really dig deep into it.
Yeah, this is probably the one I've looked at the most. And I just, the 3D printed clamps and dovetails and everything. It's really cool looking.
Yeah, definitely. If you're into guitars, then you probably know what a guitar pedal board is for. I don't. I want to thank that. That's the ones that we saw. If you're hearing this and you have not heard us mention your thing and you put it out anytime before July 29th, message the Clampcast on Instagram and say, you missed me, and send us your post, because Instagram has been very bad at actually showing us all the things in the hashtag. Some show up really weird dates and stuff, but.
We're also going to put out a couple stories, I think on the 1st, just listing all the people who we see as entries. So just be on the lookout for that. And if you don't see your name, if you're not tagged in it, just send us a message and we'll look for
it. Yes. All right. On that note, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. I want to thank everyone who contributes over there, but I especially want to thank our top level, the F clamp level, Brent Jarvis from Clean Cut Woodworking, Vincent Ferrari from Because We Make, Austin from the High Caliber Craftsman, Scott Oram from Dad It Yourself DIY, and Joe Herdina. So thank you, everyone. Everyone who supports us over there gets access to the pre-show and after-show, which are in a separate RSS feed that you can actually get on your little podcast player, and it automatically downloads it. I set it up so that it downloads the pre-show before the episode goes out and the after-show after the episode goes out. So if you just listen to everything in order as it was downloaded, it should all work out. It probably never does, but that's my goal. And you also get a numbered keychain made by the YouTube star, Morley Kurt. These are going to be worth money one day.
Yeah.
For sure. And if you're interested in that, you can go to Patreon.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, keep going. Do it.
Yeah. I was going to say that if you're interested in that, you can go to patreon.com/clamp.
Clampmentations.
Yeah. So in case you didn't know, Steve, we record that every time. So you have to say
it. Live so, tape.
Steve, do you have an order for us this week?
You put me on the spot now. Hang on. I can't make a word out of SMG. Oh, no, SMG. That's...
There you go.
Yeah.
Small machine gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that means you're first.
Right. In which case, yes. I'm actually going to sponsor someone... sponsor. Jesus. I'm going to shout out... a channel that we talk about on Forza Tools fairly regularly, but this is a whole new audience, so they might not know about it. But it's Kurzgesagt, which is, I think it's a German word for in a nutshell. But essentially, it's an educational channel that tackle all kinds of subjects, and they're very open and honest about their research, where it comes from. They've put videos out before where they've corrected mistakes, where they've said, actually, you know what? We got it wrong. Here's what we said. Here's why it's wrong. Here's how we found out. The way the videos come put across, I really like the kind of it's simplistic animation style. And they're just really, really good educational videos on all kinds of topics, from what it would be like for the last human to ever exist, all the way through to like the first life that ever existed. They've done stuff on climate change, on COVID-19, all kinds of different viruses. It's just, it's a really, really interesting channel that puts complex ideas and complex notions into short form, easily digestible videos. And it's very much a case of if you can, you know, you can watch a 10-minute video, and if it's something that you're actually interested in, there's normally links where you can do further research if you want to. So yeah, I think Kurtz Gazette, which I appreciate, is not easy to spell. So it's KURZEGESAGT. Which, like I say, I think it's a German word for in a nutshell. Just a really, really good channel for if you just want to sit down and learn something new.
Cool. Well, we're going to have a link to that channel in the show notes. We put out our show notes at the same time as the podcast episode. So you could just find them right there. You don't have to wait attacked. Weeks or months.
I'm going to do something I've been doing a lot of apparently, and that's recommending something that Adam has already recommended, because Adam actually has really good media recommendations. But I feel like this is a special case because when he recommended it the last time, he said the wrong thing. So a couple weeks ago, Adam recommended Hustle, the Adam Sandler movie, but he called it Humble. So when I was writing the show notes, I was like Googling like Humble Adam Sandler movie. I was like, this doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But I knew the movie he was talking about. But Hustle, the movie that came out with Adam Sandler and Queen Latifah and a bunch of other people this year, super good. I watched it last night. I'm not a huge basketball fan, but apparently there's like a ton of basketball stars who are in the movie, which makes sense because they show a lot of basketball and like they clearly need to be professional athletes to do some of the things they're doing. It's really good. It's like a great story. It's uplifting. It definitely like motivated me to sort of get, it's not that I've fallen out of skateboarding. It's just that with all the stuff that happened last week, like it was about a week that I wasn't as on it. So it was a good like athletic motivation to be like, oh, I want to like be putting in work and feeling that motivation or feeling that progression. Cause that's what it really like shows is he gets this athlete and he's training up and he takes him from like great talent to great talent plus hard work equals, you know, great athlete. It's just like all around really good movie. Would recommend.
I think I actually talked about it on Fools of Tools a couple weeks ago. And yeah, I completely agree with everything you've just said. Like I'm exactly the same. Like I'm not a huge Adam Sandler fan. I'm not a huge basketball fan. I'm not that big into sports at all, but really, really good film. Really enjoyed it. Yeah, definitely felt motivated after watching it. The only reason I knew how many of the basketball players were like actual players is because if you watch the end credits, it's just like so and so as himself.
That's how I knew too.
It was brilliant. But nice. I fully endorse your recommendation there.
So the guy who plays the owner of the 76ers, like the guy, the younger guy, I fully thought he was Justin Timberlake in a bald cap for the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yes.
And I was like, it's not quite there, but he could be.
Wow. I'm not going to unsee that now.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to check it now. That's the third time someone's recommended it out of the podcasts I listen to. So maybe I should watch it.
Yeah,
but I am currently watching the Resident Evil TV show. Mm. I've watched all the Resident Evils. I love zombie stuff, and I know like T-Virus and zombie aren't exactly the same thing. If you're really into zombies, I get it. But the new Resident Evil TV show is like it's like a reset on the timeline, as if they had nuked Raccoon City.
Okay,
and so the T-Virus didn't get out then, so now there's like a new T-Virus. Okay. So it's kind of cool because it's like it's like a reset on the whole show. And they did it right by not like trying to pander to everyone's wishes on it, on like seeing the old zombies and stuff. It's like a new take on it. And I like it.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard quite a lot of varying opinions on the new show, and it's one of those where I'm like, I'm gonna have to watch this for myself now. So yeah, it's good hearing more positive stuff about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't see a lot of the things I've heard that were negative about it had to do with the casting choices and the color of their skin. Yeah. And I just kept going, well, that makes me want to watch it even more.
Yeah.
Because like if that's what you're complaining about, that means it's probably not bad.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you're just mad.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, at this point, we would normally do Adam's Australian Word of the Week. Adam's not here. And we don't have, or we would do a Morley Reads a Review, and we don't have a review. And I didn't think to prepare a Canadian Word of the Week for Steve to try and guess. But I did mention Timbits. Do you know what a Timbit is?
Yeah, isn't it basically? Oh no, am I thinking of? So is a Timbit like a penguin, as in the chocolate bar that we have in the UK, not as in the animal?
No. It is not a chocolate bar.
What is it? It's from Tim Hortons. Is it a little like donut thing?
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah, in America they call them donut holes, which I think is like weird because the hole. Anyways, that's a whole other conversation about people not understanding how holes work. But they're I guess you could put them in the middle of where the hole is, but that's what they are. So there you go. There's your, for all of our non-Canadian, probably Americans probably know what a Timbit is. There you go. Timbit.
Nice.
Grant's Canadian Word of the Week.
And where I grew up, we would call them Munchkins because that's the Dunkin' Donuts brand name for them.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
I think in the UK, we just call them mini donuts.
That makes sense.
But mini donuts have a hole in them.
No, because donuts don't always have a hole in them because donuts can have jam in the middle instead.
But then if you get a mini donut that has jam in the middle and it looks like a donut, but Timbits are like a sphere.
Yeah.
And donuts are a like flattened circle, like a cylinder.
Sometimes they're rods. They're not always that shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're definitely not sphere. You don't get a donut, like a full-size donut that's a sphere. So that's what I wanted.
I'm very passionate about this.
A donut apple.
I am very passionate about a lot of things. And if you want to hear a G rant, you got to stay for the after show. I want to thank TF Turning for the new theme song. And Tim, reach out to us. We got to work on the pop version. We got to go poppy. 80s pop, I think, is what was voted on. I want to thank Steve for coming out. Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. It's been an absolute joy to be on here.
Yeah. And if you want to find Steve, you can go on his Instagram, Moonshine Metalworks. You can go follow the Fools with Tools podcast at everywhere. It's Fools with Tools or FWT podcast and all your social media places. You can find Clampcast over on the Instagram, Twitter. I don't think we have a TikTok, but we have a Facebook group with one person in it, and it's always fun. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you all next week.
See you.
Cheers, guys. Bye.